Stay there.
Okay, guys, we're back from the French podcast. I'm here with Travis. How you doing today, bud?
Man, now that I'm with you, I'm fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Man, we got some good golf going on. We're in the middle of the FedEx Cup playoffs, but I want to talk more personal golf here lately. Have you gotten out and played lately?
I have not played.
That's a shame, man.
I know. You got PGA behind my name, and I haven't played since May.
So I've been playing a lot, as you know, and yes, you had alluded last podcast that, you know, I've lost some weight, and in that is trying to become a better golfer. I kind of want to start playing more competitive golf here in the Valley, and I have no idea what that looks like, but I want to. And you've dabbled in that world, and you're also an instructor. So yesterday, I hit my lowest round to date, also included me hitting my goal of breaking 85. I'm not overly concerned with the score because I understand that it happened on a course that it's my home course. Summertime, I've been playing this place religiously. But it was the consistency that I think I showed, you know, the greens and regulations, the fairways hit, the lack of hazards or penalties. Putting obviously needs to be improved, but I think for the first time ever since really playing golf, I'm in a position where I have a foundation on something to work off of. And in your experience, when a golfer reaches that level of play, when he reaches that threshold, what can he or she expect?
As far as like the next step, I guess I'll start with we do have Joel's scorecard in front of us here that we were kind of recapping before that we started the podcast. And what I always look for when I'm working with students is, great, go out and play. You're starting to see some progress. We can give you some tips. We can give you some pointers. We can work on swing, but it's just like you losing weight. Guys are like, why can't I lose weight? Why can't I lose weight? Well, I'm eating a lot. Well, I'm not exercising that much. And those are just broad strokes,
right?
Versus like, well, let's actually break down your meal plans. Let's count your calories. Let's see what your fat intake is, your sugar intake is. And you start to break those things out. And then some things become glaringly apparent. So what you did, and I wish more people would do this, is not only did you keep your score, but you kept track of fairways hit. You kept track of putts. You kept track of greens in regulation.
Right.
And you kept track of hazards, which is where we get those big numbers.
So my mind gets, I saw this recently on someone else's Instagram, them showing a card maybe about 2-3 weeks ago. And my mind starts to race when I play. And it's my biggest enemy when I play is, you know, we do great on the driving range. Then we get out and play and it all goes to crap sometimes. So I started tracking those mainly to remind myself that this is a one hole at a time gig. And by slowing it down and tracking the fairway, the green, the putts, if there's a hazard, it allows me to slow everything else down. And that's ever since I've started doing that within the last few weeks, I've started seeing tremendous gains in my game. So
mm-hmm. No, that's good. You need to kind of dissect it. So just by dissecting what you did here on your scorecard, I mean, I can easily see, wow, your score could have been even better than this lowest score that you've ever had.
Right.
Just by, wow, greens in regulation. You didn't even hit 27% of your greens in regulation, and you still had 38 putts.
Right.
And not to expose anything that Joel's doing here, but wow, that's so easy to just shave a few of those strokes there by getting one or two more greens on under your belt, and then hopefully you can lower your putting. And it's not, so we can find some tips for putting, we can find some tips for iron play, but now you're focusing on it, you're dissecting it. So now your goal is, next time you go out and play, can I get 30% of my greens?
Right.
And then can I get to 35 putts? So on and so forth. And you're starting to like dissect your game that way. And then that's what you're using to focus. Instead of, I do the same thing. I'm out there, I'm wandering, I'm playing with my phone, I'm looking at music. I'm not even like focused on
right.
my game anymore.
Right, gotta have the playlist going.
Right, exactly. And then I'm like, why did I play so crappy? Well, I haven't practiced. I haven't played, and I wasn't focused. So I had the trifecta going for me there. So you're starting to find focus. You've lost some weight. Now you're starting to focus on your game, and now you're breaking it apart, dissecting it a little bit more. I mean, it's just going to keep getting better.
Another thing that changed for me is I played with a couple guys, back nine with a couple guys at work here on their day off, and one of them's one of your instructors. And I just watched his mannerisms as he played. Like, wiping clubs off after every shot, rewiping before they come out of the bag, wiping off grips. Like, his caddy towel was just filthy. Placing the ball down and bringing a towel to wipe the ball down. Like, those little things. And we might not realize, like, we get out here, like you said, we're worried about the playlist, the drink flow, whatever, but we leave so much out there. So we give so many strokes around because of little things like that.
Mm-hmm. The attention to details.
Exactly.
You don't have to play slower. You don't have to play slower. It's kind of like the biggest thing, especially when you're nervous on a new course or you're in a tournament, the best thing I could preach to somebody is to have a pre-shot routine.
Right.
Where you're doing the same thing every time, whether it's cleaning your clubs or wiping your grips down or whatever it's going to be. But they set a timer on Ernie Els back in the 90s to show his pre-shot routine for a driver and an iron, and it was exactly the same.
Do you remember the time?
It was like seconds. It was like
seconds. Okay, but it was the same thing.
Yeah, 7.8 seconds between the time he stood behind the ball, lined up, got set up in his pre-shot routine, and then hit the ball. He had he was playing fast, but it didn't matter if it was I wanted to say it was like a 9-iron and a driver, and it was like 7.8 seconds or 8.7 seconds.
But he had his routine down, and that's what got him through his shot.
Exactly. Gets him through the shot, calms the nerves, increases focus, and then also creates a sense of consistency, just like making sure we have the same ball position every time with the club.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's a big one, too. It's just breaking down all of those little things. They've really helped me this year, mid-90s down into where I am now, which is over the last few months, pretty impressive.
Yep.
But that's what makes, to me, that's what, it's just another draw to the game is, you slow your mind down and you, like you said, you pick it apart, you break it piece by piece, and then you can start finding those things to work on. Like, obviously, the 38 putts, that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Yep.
But now I know, and, putting drills aren't always fun. But,
no.
But we have to do them.
We got to do them. Fuzzy Zeller back in the late 80s was in Golf Digest magazine, and maybe I brought it up on the show before, where he led the tour in putting.
Okay.
Led the tour in putting. But the secret stat that we didn't point out was, he led the tour in putting because he was at the bottom 10 in greens and regulation.
Oh,
so
wow.
When you miss greens and you chip up and you one putt, you have a series of 6 or 7 one putts during the round because you missed 6 or 7 greens. You're going to lead the tour in putting, right?
Right.
So that would have been interesting to see if your putts had been lower when you'd miss so many greens. But that shows me that not only are we missing greens, but maybe our wedge work needs a little bit of work. When we do get on the green, it might not just be putting. Indicated that chipping around the greens kind of makes me uncomfortable right now.
I can do it, but I'm not comfortable doing it.
Yep.
Like I can't walk up to a green and pull out like a 56 and know that I'm like 3 feet off the green and then I've got another 40 feet to the pin. I'm not comfortable pulling out like a 56 and just, going, third speed and getting it up there. Yep. Like, I rather bump and run it or Texas wedge it. That I feel that, and even those, I mean, if you look at the numbers, that doesn't always work.
Sure.
I always leave myself, too long.
Yep.
I guess myself too short, right?
Too short.
Yeah, it'd be too short.
If anything, like when you're laying up to a green, good players always try to leave themselves a full swing, right? Because touchy partial swings are difficult to repeat and get the feel for. But let me ask you this, and I'm going to sound like somebody's personal trainer, but in the last month, you played a lot of golf, actually all summer, but in the last month, how many minutes have you dedicated to just chipping practice? Good answer.
I go to the range twice a week. It's kind of come down to about once a week. And usually like the last 10 to 15 balls in my bucket, I'll pull like one or two wedges out and just work on chipping them. Mm-hmm. That's about it. But it's almost like hitting into a mat because I don't have, not many facilities around here have a publicly open chipping area where you can actually visually see, okay, there's a pin. I need, you know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So I probably need to find one of those.
There is. I can name some that I'll take off the air because obviously we're doing this from Starfire and we want to give them we want to give them all the props. But yeah,
they got there a great are some driving places range. Too.
Yes, we do have a great driving range. So it really is. It's just like, if you could spend 20 minutes twice a week over the next 2 weeks just dedicated only to chipping and shaking your balls and going back and chipping from another spot, you would see a dramatic improvement, assuming that you've got the foundation.
Right.
Just the basics in chipping. You don't even have to have anything fancy. Just basic pitching and chipping motions, and see if we can't repeat that to where you can dial in your distances. That'd just one thought. And then it's like, then you take the other step. Then the other step is like, because we're going to miss greens, right?
Right.
So we might as well start with that, in my humble opinion. Then we take the step of, okay, let's dial in these 7 and 8 iron approach shots. You know, why are we missing greens?
Right.
And then we go from there. But if your chipping's comfortable, then it takes a lot of pressure off your approach shots to where, well, if I miss a green, I'm still going to be okay.
I'm still going to be okay.
Don't worry about missing the green. All of a sudden, you just start hitting greens because this is in a better place, your mind. I'm pointing to my head.
It's all mental. It's all mental.
And yeah, this is a conversation. This is like a whole podcast in itself, just this topic, this small little topic we're talking
about. And,
you know,
I'd like to do more of that. Like, we'll talk about, obviously, we're going to talk about what's going on in, like, the pro game and what we see out there and, like, creators and other content. But, you know, taking it more to, like, the local personal level of, like, our individual games or what we see out there, I think that's fun because I'm sure someone out there can relate. You know, all 11 listeners, someone out of those 11 listeners is going to be able to relate to what we're saying. So we just finished the Olympics. We're going to move on a little bit here. We'll keep coming back to my improving golf game and what Travis sees in other people's golf games as well. But we finished the Olympics. Scotty won, as we discussed. But it's still a topic. Who's having the better season, Scotty or Xander? They've been asking everyone around, PGA or whatever. I guess it could be an interesting topic, but is it even fair to compare? Like, that's my – I'm at that point now. I was like, dude, they're both having great seasons.
Yep.
What, they're 1 and 2 in the world? You know, one's had multiple wins, gold medal. The other one's had multiple majors. Like, is it even fair to compare? Because their goals might be different.
Right.
Right?
Right. Well said. And I'm a big Xander Schauffele fan and have been for years. And finally, he's, like, breaking through, so I love it. And Scottie Scheffler is kind of the unsung hero because he's not out there – looking for publicity. He's not doing anything to get a lot of
right
publicity.
A lot of hype around, right?
A lot of hype
name,
around.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just gone, I don't know, under the radar, if you will. But what do we measure golfers by historically? What do we look at when we talk about Nicklaus or we talk about...
We're going to talk about majors.
We talk about majors. And I think if that's how we really technically measure everybody by, and we want Tiger Woods to get to a certain number of majors, then you got to say... Xander Schauffele,
right?
But then when Scottie Scheffler's caddy has made more than 500 other tour players,
right?
His caddy in money,
yeah,
in
just
earnings,
based off,
like,
you know, a basic 10%.
Tell me, Scottie Scheffler, or tell me, Scheffler isn't doing anything, and he's got a gold medal to his name, and he's like been sneaky, just coming out of the pack and pulling some of these,
yeah, some of
tournaments
those,
off.
Some of those tournaments.
Oh, like, it's hard to pick.
Before I left to come record today, he was sitting, I think, just about even. And I'm like, I haven't even looked at the numbers, but the only thing that popped in my head was he must have such a commanding lead in FedEx points than everyone else that these first two tournaments, he's just trying to get past the round of 60 and then the 30 into the final grouping there. Because when was the last time you saw Scottie Scheffler on a Sunday sitting around par?
Right. Yep.
I can't tell you.
He's just that lurking cheetah. He's just hanging out in the weeds out there, just waiting for the big prey to come by. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't need to turn it on. He doesn't need to do anything special. Just stay in there. Or maybe don't even show up. Maybe take the week off. Get a massage.
Does he have enough points? Yeah. Could he have done that and just shown up next weekend?
Right.
Yeah, that would have been wild. But, yeah, like you said, like, you know, Xander's still, you know, up there in striking distance for the day. He's only, like, right before we started recording, we looked, he was through 7. He was, what, 5 shots back. Keegan's up there winning right now, or leading, with Scott right behind him off a shot. And they're still in the front 9 of the course. Like, those guys can make moves. But you alluded to it. It's like Keegan's making a strong case for being a playing captain.
Yeah.
You know, the way he's been playing lately, ever since he got the nod to be captain, all of a sudden you're seeing him up a lot in the top 10 of these tournaments.
For sure. And I tell you what, I will be, before this Full Swing came out where they kind of went through the Ryder Cup and how he didn't make it, I was not a Keegan Bradley fan. I could take him or leave him. He was quirky, different. Wasn't on my radar. But after watching the class that he handled the, you know, the decline to get on the team, and how classy he was, at least on the airwaves. It makes me think, you know what, I'm pulling for this guy now. I want to see him just like crush and be a playing captain. Like, that hasn't been done since, I think, Nicholas or Palmer, or back in the day when those guys were playing captains. Might be the 70s might have been. I could be.
So, yeah, it's going to be the wild to watch that too. But I think my take back to the better season is I think they're both having great seasons.
Yeah.
Most likely Scheffler's going to probably be our champion.
Yep.
Maybe because of what he's done already. But, I mean, both of them, I mean, I think if you asked any tour player out there, I think it'd be hard to differentiate which season they'd rather have.
Totally. Like you said, is it fair to compare? And largely, I don't disagree with that.
I mean, if you hold majors as your main priority, you might lean one way. If it's money and just titles, you know, and tournaments abroad, no matter what they are, mm-hmm. little mixture of everything, gold medal, major, multiple tournaments, then, you know, you might lean towards Scheffler.
Yeah. Yeah. You know who else doesn't have a gold medal? Tiger Woods. Nicklaus doesn't have a gold
exactly.
medal. Arnold Palmer doesn't have a gold medal. Ben Hogan doesn't have a gold medal.
You know,
that's a pretty interesting measuring stick.
In the wake of the Olympics, because we recorded on the Sunday that gold medal round was – the final round was going on, they started talking to a lot of the players, like Tommy Fleetwood, who, you know, got the silver. And it became apparent – especially, I guess, with this and the way with the crowds being there and more people, you know, actually participating, that going forward, it looks like some people, the weight might be put more, a little bit more weight might be put into a gold medal. A lot of people are really proud to represent their country and go after it.
That's the most emotional I've ever seen Scottie Scheffler.
Oh, yeah. And Tommy, I mean, seemed to be to hold that silver and be in that. And that be fighting for the gold on Sunday, he seemed elated. Like, it just, I think while they were playing, it really, I don't know if it really like sunk in, but for the three that podiumed, while they were standing on the podium looking at everyone, I think it started to take a little bit different of a meaning for them in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe elevated the status of what a gold medal brings to a golfer now.
So, yeah, I think that's a very eloquent way to say it, is to just to elevate the status. And now it might be coming, what, the next Olympics are here, right?
Los Angeles.
And I think they're playing Riviera. I think it was either Riviera or LA Country Club. But I want to say it was Riviera that was chosen. Cool. I could be wrong. But
both. I don't think you can go wrong with either golf course.
But it might be now on more golfers' radar, at least coming into that year, to make sure that they're in the top, you know, in the top of the world rankings, so that when, you know, countries choose their players, that they can go and represent their country.
Yep, for sure.
I don't know, just a lot of quirky, fun, nerdy golf stuff that we like to talk about. Another one that I noticed this week, and I want your take because I showed you the video. I'm going to have two examples that help guide the conversation. But do you think the PGA right now is rebranding? Looking at some of the stuff that you've seen them come out with social media and what they're doing at future, like with this Creators Cup that's going to happen next week, acknowledging these golf creators and content creators and having their own tournament, to what we see on their Instagram with like the video of last week at Atlanta, when they were it was a hot mic picking up the fans and some of their conversations. Are they rebranding? Are they finally coming around and realizing what LIV tapped into with a younger crowd and trying to, no matter what happens between LIV and their merger or whatever, are they trying to become a little bit more hip and rebrand for that younger crowd?
Well, I think a rebrand sounds like that's a pretty bold term, in my humble opinion.
It is.
But you did say, are they kind of coming around? Yes, I think they're kind of coming around. I don't know if they're going to they're anywhere near a full rebrand, but I think they're starting to acknowledge. I don't even want to say that they're embracing, but they're acknowledging that, yeah, you know what? Influencers move the needle.
Right.
Content creators are moving the needle, and we need to start embracing that. They might be a generation behind still, because they just seem to move slow, like Augusta. Augusta, we're not having people of color. We're not having women.
Right.
And then that Martha, you can have your strike down the road. And now all of a sudden, who's in there? Condoleezza Rice, other women. I mean, a woman of color.
You know,
right there as a member at the Masters. And it was a slow eek, but they never rebranded, but they did allow things to happen. So I think the PGA Tour likes their, this is going to be controversial, their white old man status. They're not necessarily sticking to it, but it's like
it's still there because it's still there because that demographic is still there.
That demographic is still there.
I mean,
but the needle's moving. And I think things like this that you kind of picked up on today especially are signaling that, okay, good, a change in the guard.
Because a lot of these creators are already they're already filming rounds and content with golfers. The golfers themselves have already kind of come around, and they're doing stuff with these guys. And like you said, to see the PGA at least acknowledging it, I think it's a good thing. I think
because
the creators are focusing in on the players, and by seeing the players, that's going to expand more into tournaments. Because now, like, oh yeah, I saw this guy on XYZ podcast and on their channel. Let's see how he does in this tournament this week. You'll start to, you know, just like with baseball players and everything, you start, there's more exposure outside, you know, of tournaments for your players. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen? More people are going to start getting favorites, just like you saw with Full Swing.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan wasn't on your radar, but now that you saw how he handled everything, you're like, yeah, we're Team Keegan. Let's see what he can do.
Yep. And I think it started a couple years ago with that Pip. I don't know if that was right what it is, but it's like, hey, let's make sure our players are creating some content that people are following. Get them out there doing that
little right.
Pip incentive, but also
I guess the Creators Cup is this week, and you got guys like Fat Perez and Luke Kwan and Paige Spiranek and others playing in that. And I don't know what the prize is, but it's going to be interesting to see how the winner kind of uses that toward his or her brand moving forward.
Yep.
To get a little bit more legitimacy maybe, or more followers. And
I love seeing young, attractive, energetic people out there pushing my product, which is golf. Because I was the GM of a club here in town when the market went south and courses started closing up and mowed over. And so that was 2007, 2008, 2009. I really can't believe I hung on to my job and kept moving through the ranks of being a general manager, director of golf at different courses during some of the toughest times golf has ever seen, to the point where we thought, is this ever going to be resurrected? It's probably drying on the vine, if not dead on the vine.
Oh, wow.
And now we had COVID, and a whole other generation of people, are younger people, are coming to golf and coming out here to be outside and be around friends. And the more publicity we can get through all these content creators, man, I'm on board. Live golf. I hope they continue to push the PGA Tour with all the stuff they're doing on social media. And they're keeping it hip and trendy and involving music and involving celebrities. And while I'm not following it religiously day in and day out, I'm not necessarily watching, I bet younger generations might be. They might be watching and paying attention, or at least picking up on it, to where it's at least in people's mind. Whereas in 2007, it wasn't on anybody's mind. It was a luxury item. It's the first thing to get cut when things get tight, and it's the last thing to come back when things get better. And it's come back.
Oh,
we need to strike while the iron's hot and embrace it.
I mean, people are, you know, making full, like, they're leaving traditional 9-to-5s and becoming full-on creators with, like, the backing of Callaway,
right,
TaylorMade, and, you know, other major golf brands throughout the industry and outside of the industry with alcohol brands and stuff like that. Like, everyone's really jumping onto that train, and it's good to see that, I guess, at least for right now, the PGA is embracing it as well.
Yep, at least inching forward. That's a hard old school society that it's hard to get them off their,
it's change,
their
man.
Lazy boy.
Changes for those who have anchored in their position for a long time, change is hard.
Yeah, well said.
And, you know, the PGA has operated in the way they've operated for years, and they've had quite a following and quite a backing, and, you know, they could very well take take the position that we don't need the change.
Right.
People will change for us.
There's that old Nike commercial where the two guys sitting at a bar and a guy's like, Metalwoods? What's a Metalwood? I'll play Persimmons till the day I die. And then it flashes back to like, wood? What's a wood? Beechwood is the club of gentlemen or whatever. And it goes on and on and on. Just like through the history of golf, how everybody's fought this change.
Everyone's
change
fought the change.
Keeps happening, right? So.
Well, see, last week, let's talk Matsuyama last week.
Oh, wow.
He was our bronze medal winner from the Olympics.
Yep.
He kept himself sneaky close at the first leg of the playoffs at St. Jude. I think the consensus was Victor had this one. I know I thought that, and then I teed off over at TPC Scottsdale, the Champions Course, last week. Very mm-hmm. nice. Very, very, very fun course. But get the dings on the phone while we play, and next thing I know, it says Matsuyama came from behind and won. I'm like, wait, what?
Right, right. How exciting has that been? Win the bronze, gets robbed in London.
Doesn't have his coach or his caddy last week.
Right, right. And then pulls off an upset.
Like we talked during the last one with what was it, McIntyre having his dad on the bag. You know, just these random scenarios and storylines pop up, and the outcome to them are just fantastic.
Yep, fairy tales. I love it.
So that leads into this week. We have the BMW Championship. Currently, Keegan Bradley is our leader. Adam Scott is hot on his heels, and you have Xander lurking. So could nice. We have another one? You know, all those guys are still, like, at least last we checked, we're still on the front nine. So could we have something else change?
I feel like the back nine on a lot of these events as of late have been exciting. We thought it was done with John Rahm going into the Olympics.
Right.
And then
Scotty all of a sudden, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, anything can happen. I'm excited. Golf has been in an exciting spot here, the events, the last month or two.
So the big question coming out of being hyped about the last two tournaments, coming into next week at the Tour Championship, is it going to matter? Or, I mean, I'm going to watch regardless. It's Labor Day weekend. College football is going to be on. Speaking of that, yesterday they had Florida State and it was Florida State.
Georgia Tech.
And Georgia Tech in Ireland. That was a game.
Yeah, right?
That was a game.
I know that broke a lot of hearts, but I love seeing stuff like that you don't expect.
Georgia Tech coming out.
Yep.
And then when they won, they asked the coach about the offensive line. He goes, duh, run the ball. But yeah, anyway, but we're coming into, you know, the Tour Championship next week. Scotty's just been so dominant. Is there somebody that you think we'll have to look at the points and we'll discuss, you know, but
there's some mathematician that has it all figured out. If this happens and this happens, then
looking at it just like for this week to get past the 30, like certain guys, like so and so is going to have to finish solo here and then he's going to have to do this. Yeah. And
no, it's Scotty's to lose. It's Scotty's to lose.
I mean, yeah.
It's Scotty's to lose.
I mean, and if not, I mean, going, right behind him's got to be Xander.
Xander, all day. I think you're right.
So if Xander has a good showing today, like a top three showing today, there might make a case for those two on next week, depending on how they play. But like you said, I'm going to play off of that and completely agree. It's Scotty's to lose. Yeah. He's the king of the hill. That's who everyone's going to, you know, be looking at going into next season too. It's like we're going to be looking at his fans is how dominant is he going to be? Is he going to have another year like that? And other guys are going to have to step up their game too.
Yep.
I mean, it's just one of those things. But today, Matt Fitzpatrick had a club taken out. Well, he cracked the face on one of his clubs. Asked to have it taken out so he could replace, and was denied by all three rules officials, even though they admitted that you could visibly see and feel the crack in it. I think the explanation came out that because you couldn't visibly see through the crack, that the club was still deemed worthy enough to play. Just like Keegan Bradley, Matt Fitzpatrick, he kept his composure. Scotty, on the other hand, dude, Scotty was yelling at the official, like trying to, you know, plead Fitzpatrick, Fitzy's case, which goes to show his character, again, goes to show Scotty's character. But how do you feel about that rule?
Well, first of all, I love him coming to the aid of another player. I love that he gets arrested and he doesn't lose his junk. But the minute one of his fellow competitors has a, sounds like a pretty viable rules challenge, he comes to his aid and is like all over that rules official. I would love to have it explained to me better. Like, okay, so I can't see through the cracks. So why is that still denied? What impact does that have? When there's this visible crack that you admit is there, that you can feel is there, rules official, why is this not deemed unplayable? So I would like that further explained to me, because I think Fitzpatrick kind of got, he got screwed.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
I think he definitely, watching his mannerisms after the ruling came back, he took the head off the shaft, put the head back into its cover, put the shaft back into his bag. I think he's holding on to that, because I think he's going to be having those exact same questions after this round as to why wasn't this deemed, replaceable. So that's going to be something to kind of track on this next week and touch base on the next podcast. But
and the only thing to benefit from that would be everybody learns a lesson.
Right.
If they have to reverse it, because they won't financially compensate them. They won't. Maybe it's a letter of an apology or something, but nothing more will come from that than a lesson learned.
Or maybe at very least, going into the tour championship next week, the PGA has a better clarification on the rule.
Ah, there you go. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at minimum, I know it's not going to affect anything this tournament.
Right.
But at minimum, can we have like a better understanding, like a better clarification?
It'll either go into a decisions of the rules of golf. It'll be an adaptation in there, or the next rules change, we will see that more clearly defined.
Rules change. We're going to be talking about some rules change coming up, and we'll see how. They're always trying to change something. I mean, just like football this year with kickoff, they've completely.
Right. I'm interested to see how that pans out.
I still don't understand it completely. They're highlighting stuff on the screen, and I'm like, why? Just like, why are we? Why? But anywho, well, guys, thanks for listening to us. It's another sunny afternoon here in Scottsdale. Travis and I thank you for listening. And until next time, you guys hit them straight. Travis, thank you.
Thank you.